Hello and welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast for Thursday, February 13th, 2020, otherwise known as Get a Different Name Day. So I guess, I don't know, we'll rename somebody.
I mean, this is...
Mike.
This is the obvious question. What would your second name be if you had one?
Well, let's do this with, like, would you call your channel anything different?
Well, mine is...
Right? No, I'm good with mine.
Mine is technically Chris Salamone 1. So I... Maybe.
Which I can't think of anything better
Chris
than that.
Chris Salamone 0. Just be the original. That's what I would change my name to.
Yeah, I don't think I would. I mean, I'm sure I could come up with something a little bit better and shorter, but it's fine.
Works.
People, I think, worry way too much about
for sure
these things.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the fact that mine is Chris Salamone 1, and I'm sure very few people know that. They just think it's Four Eyes.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really, you can call yourself whatever you want and that'll just become your name. That's the life lesson here.
Well, it's like Ben Paik. I still always refer to him as Wobie.
Oh yeah, for sure. Wobie Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah. He pretty much created a second name for his actual
yeah,
self.
Just become his name. Well, also because there's two Bens, so you just don't want the confusion.
Right.
But
yeah, he basically, yeah. He named himself a variation of his dog's yep. name. So he named himself after his own
Toby
dog.
Toby and Wobie.
So shout out to Ben Paik.
You mean Wobie.
Yeah, it's usually the other way around. Normally, people's dogs are their own namesake, not the reverse.
Here's my dog, Chris.
Well, he's a special dude.
Yeah, exactly. Shout out,
indeed. So what's going on?
Just posted a video. I posted the plywood bed with the sliding headboard. It's a cool project. It's got an interesting detail that I haven't seen anywhere else, which isn't always the case with the stuff we build. So it's always nice when you feel like you figured out like a clever economical way to make some sort of mechanical moving part. And yeah, it was just angled cuts with a circular saw and just enough of them to fit in a piece of aluminum bar and start sliding that around.
Yeah, I like the fact that you used an aluminum bar because that's just always going to slide smooth. It won't be something that breaks down over time. It's just going to be really reliable.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really smart thing to do. I liked that. And I also really enjoyed the way like, it was big pieces, but it all assembled together with screws and would disassemble to move really easily as well, which whenever you're building a bed, that's almost one of the most important factors, or at least for us when we're designing beds, knowing that people stay in a house for 5 years if they're renting kind of regularly.
Right.
And so when we're trying to design for the masses, like that's such an important factor.
Yeah. Yeah. Any bed, especially one that has like a heavy pieces, should be designed in some sort of modular way so that you can, yeah, so you can move it without scrapping it or taking a chainsaw to it. So it all comes apart, like the headboard comes apart, even the side tables come off of the headboard, and then a bunch of big pieces of the frame. So really, really like that project a lot. Like it just, and you know what's weird? I got that pine plywood, $22 a sheet.
Giving it
must
away.
Have been on sale a little bit, right?
Yeah,
but that's a good deal
because normally it's around 32. So
yeah,
that kept all the materials under, you know, right around $200 or under. So other than that, we just got a big sandblaster. So I just ordered Ooh. One from Eastwood. Not a sponsor, just I've wanted to have one for a while to
blast sand
and also carve wood. I've done a lot of experience before where I blow out the softwood on you know, pine or fir or, you know, even cedar, and when you sandblast out all the soft parts, it just leaves the hard part, so you get this really raised grain.
Nice.
So you can do all kinds of cool things from wood block prints to just having a different way of finishing materials. So Brett from Skull and Spades is setting that up and building like a nice dedicated station for it, because, you know, it has to have its own air compressor and all that stuff. But have you guys done any sandblasting?
No. Is it the type of thing where like, or I don't know if they're all this way, but like, you know, whenever I see them, I'm used to seeing it where it's like you stick your gloves into like a box.
Yep.
It's that type of thing.
Yeah. Like the, like you're straight up doing some sort of research
yeah.
on deadly
it's like
viruses.
Outbreak, yeah.
So yeah, we got the whole setup. And so you hook that up to like a hopper where you put in your sandblasting medium. And then an air compressor plugs into that. And the cabinet's really just to recycle the abrasive material, so you just don't use it
okay.
as much. But if you have something like really big that doesn't fit in the cabinet, we're just going to make like a little surround area where we take some of the corrugated metal left over from the shipping container and just make like a backstop, so you can, you know, it won't be as efficient, but,
right.
you know, you'll be able to shovel some of that material back into the hopper.
90% of it back or whatever.
It looks fun. So, like, that is one of those things that's like really satisfying to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a show on like History Channel. It was when Pawn Stars was really big, I think called American Restoration, where like they would just get like vintage anything under the sun, from like bikes and motorcycles to like vending machines and signs. And they would sandblast a lot of stuff. They look really fun.
Yeah. I think you could.
Because like they would get like these really intricate stuff, and then they would use like a baking soda as the aggregate instead of sand, because it's a lot softer for like any more delicate pieces and all kinds of stuff. It looked really neat. So
I bet you could start a channel that was just sandblasting stuff and surpass your own channel in like 6 months.
Maybe.
I thought
about into that hydraulic press.
One, I think that's going to be more of an Instagram channel these days than anything.
Maybe. Right? Long form sandblasting. Like the,
even like the red hot nickel ball bearing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that used to be a YouTube channel. Like, I bet you that kind of has to be Instagram now for like video that length.
Maybe.
I can't imagine videos that short doing that well on YouTube.
I don't know. You'd be surprised.
Well, you just
got to
do 30 minutes of sandblasting.
I think I mentioned it before a long time ago on the podcast, but I always wanted to do a channel where I just get an old thickness planer and just put like random stuff through it. Because I think with, like planing something
with like
planing something that's old, planing down some like old material where you see it like rough on one side, especially if it's the overhead camera, so you can just see it like passing through and coming out all clean the other side. There's something satisfying about that. But I also think there's just like funny things that you could put in there, like a phone book or something.
Yeah, and if it had some kind of clear case to where you could see the blade spinning too, that would be top notch. That would be insane.
Yeah, I think a sandblasting thing would be fun. Just especially because like on Jesse's property, there's so much old rusty metal tools and just like random items lying around. So there's a lot of fodder for cleaning up. So Mike, what do you got going on?
I wrapped up the kitchen and I'm back out to Joshua Tree, which is great. I'm going to spend a little bit of time back in California before we make the trek to WorkbenchCon in Atlanta, so I can get everything set up to ready to really rock and roll as soon as we get back. But I'm excited with how the kitchen came out. The only sort of thing that went wrong with were the white concrete counters, which I mentioned before. But I sort of redeemed myself by remembering the fact that I had those super cheap IKEA counters.
Oh, yeah.
And so I got those installed. All the plumbing ended up going really well this week. It took pretty much an entire extra day of running back and forth to Home Depot, not knowing exactly what fittings and adapters I needed. And it was during a snowstorm. So I went to Home Depot when the plumbing guy wasn't there. So I made two trips to Home Depot kind of just to make guesses. And I got like 80% of the way there on what I needed. But what ended up being the issue is I had a 2-inch PVC pipe coming out of the wall for the rough-in. And then I just needed to get whatever adapter goes from that, wherever the pipe's coming out of the wall into the pipe that then goes to your J-trap is what it's called.
You know what? Okay, this is going to be a tangent. I wonder if somebody, or if this will exist eventually, or even if the technology's there yet, where somebody could make an app that, like, obviously, you know how, like, your phone, like, it can sense depth and everything, and, like, you know, you can use it to, like, find the dimensions of a room, where you could, like, for something like plumbing or other areas, where you could, like, almost, like, look at it, and it could tell you, like, you need this. Like, it could look at, like, the fitting and tell you, like, this is the exact one that you need.
It may be. And if I had that app, I would feel a lot less stupid.
What are we calling it?
Because I wouldn't have had to have a person in person tell me this. So I go to Home Depot twice and I'm so close to getting the right things. I take my like sink strainer with me because I'm like, it needs to fit into this. And then I'm just going back and forth. And then the next day I go back and thankfully the plumbing guy was there because he had called off work the day before. And I'm like, listen, man, I've got this pipe coming out of the wall. I went to the aisle and I grabbed the exact same pipe because I measured it and everything. And then I grabbed the adapter that I know I needed, the thing that goes from the, it's basically what takes you from the 2-inch PVC that's going through your house to the 1.5-inch pipe that is standard for cabinet plumbing. And I grabbed those two pieces and I was like, this is what I have coming out of the wall. This is what I need to get to. And they don't go inside of each other. And he's like, oh, okay, that's pretty weird. And I'm like, yeah. It's really crazy because they have the exact same inside diameter. And he's like, oh, you just need to go get like 2 inches of pipe and put that inside of it as like a coupler.
Yeah. So each one fits into an adapter.
Yeah, I didn't need an adapter. I just needed a couple inches of pipe, of right. the actual pipe, that the one could slip over and it went inside of the other.
So you had two.
And I felt like the biggest idiot.
You had two female connections and you just needed a...
I just needed a male.
Here we go.
Dude, I'm telling you, I felt so stupid. I looked at him, I was like, thank you, and walked away. Like, I put in my head, my face was so red because I'm looking through these adapters for literally three Home Depot trips. I'm just staring at all of these adapters. See? It's like national treasure, and I'm like, it's got to be here. The answer's here.
Right.
But really,
if you'd only seen the fantastic film Requiem for a Dream, you would already have known the solution.
Oh, really? I haven't seen the
it's
film.
It's probably not a plumbing fix, I'm guessing.
But anyways, I got all the plumbing done, and that was sort of a reassuring thing, knowing that more renovation stuff is going to happen in the future. Because that was the first time I had taken a rough in and completely plumbed it. In the past, I had just sort of retrofitted old work that was already there. Mm-hmm. And anytime I did any shower plumbing, which was going behind the wall, I called in a professional plumber because I didn't want, you know, leaks to happen behind the wall. And so this was the first time that I really took it and completed
it upon yourself.
So yeah, I mean, granted, it wasn't like a very smooth move, but all those small hiccups I'm not gonna have happen again. And so it was one of those things where, like, if I've got to plumb three bathrooms in a house, I could do it as long as it's simple stuff. So aside from that, I want to give a shout out to SharkBite connectors that they're like the push to connect PVC or PEX plumbing connectors. Those things are really cool. Because I had to go from the PEX, which is what's running through the house, and I had to get that to the connectors for the faucets to hook onto. Mm-hmm. And these SharkBite connectors, they're expensive. They're like $6 a connector or $7 a connector, but you don't need any crimping tool, which is what you normally need with PEX connections. And so literally it just slides on. It's got some weird fitting to where it just like it slides on and it never leaks. And then it's just threaded on the other side. And so that went super smooth. Built some nice floating shelves, which will sort of be their own video because that kitchen video is getting really long. So I'm going to get two videos sort of out of that kitchen space. And so I'm just in the middle of editing those now. And yeah, that's about it. Pretty productive
week. I saw
week.
You. So for those floating shelves, I think I saw on Instagram, you were using the ACS, right? Did you, like, it looked like you had an extension coming off the saw side of it. Did you use like those? Is that something that you made or something that they sent or, you know, an existing thing for the ACS that you were using?
No. So I sort of went full transformer mode, I think is what I said in the video for the whole kitchen cabinet build out. Cause I was breaking down so many sheets of full 4x8 sheets of plywood. Uh-huh. So I got I think they're the project table extension brackets.
Yeah. I think I have.
So
those
I put those in,
put them together yet.
Yes. Okay. So they're really sick. So you know the Craig Sawhorse, I think it's called a track
horse.
Yeah,
I've got that one too.
Is like their signature name for it. So the whole idea is you set up that sawhorse and it's set to whatever standard height the ACS is. Right. So they pair really well together. So you set up the sawhorse and then there's these project table extension brackets, I think is what they call them, to where they connect onto the side of the ACS table. Mm-hmm. You just throw a 2x4 on each of them and then a half inch piece of MDF.
Now you've got a big table.
And now you've got a giant table if you include the ACS because you've got a 4 foot by, I think, 3 foot table connected to a 4 foot by 8 foot table, something like that. So it was really nice for assembling all of those cabinets and doing all that sort of stuff. But I used it again because I was doing those floating shelves and I wanted it to be all seamless 45 miters in every direction. Mm-hmm. I had been doing the continuous grain projects while I was at Andrew Schultz's with the circular saw, and it just got me really curious on whether the ACS was good for making a bunch of beveled cuts.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to do, or it's somewhat easy to do with the circular saw. The only hard part is figuring out what that measurement is from the edge of the circular saw blade to where your cut actually starts.
Right.
Because a lot of times for a circular saw, if you're cutting straight 90 degrees, it'll be like 3 inches or it'll be 4 inches. But then as soon as you bevel it, it's like 3 3/8 or it's like 2 7/8.
Yeah, actually, that's a good question. Because I know like in the past, whenever I've done straight cuts with a circular saw, like I would just like measure it and then like put a piece of tape on it and write it. But I never even noticed, like, are they somewhat standard dimensions? And why that should be totally something that's just like plainly marked on there.
Well, a lot of times they'll have sort of marks at the top of the bed.
Uh-huh.
And whenever the saw is cutting like just a square 90-degree cut, I've had some saws that are like 3.5 inches. Some of them are 4 inches. Some of them are, but they're usually set to either a half inch or a full
it's
inch.
It's not like,
but when you bevel it, that start-stop point changes. Yeah. So what I do is I just set a straight edge down.
Right.
It's similar to what you're saying. I just lay a straight edge down on a scrap piece of wood and I cut that and I measure what the distance is from that scrap piece to where the cut actually starts.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. I've been like,
and then, you know,
anytime I've been using the ACS where I've had to do big sheets, I kind of did what you're talking about, like where I just got the sawhorse and set it to the exact same height. And then I would just use it that way. But
yeah,
it's because I never like, it was the type of thing where I'd have to like put it up, take it down, put it up, take it down. So I never wanted to like fully set it up with those brackets. But hopefully
right
now.
And you that, have an assembly table.
Yeah.
So
yes,
it wasn't like a thing where you were going to necessarily
true
use it for that a ton. Yeah. But and,
right,
and
but
to
if
that
I would,
point,
like
though,
now that I'll have more space, I might.
Yeah. Because to that up point, you're saying with more space, but I'm sort of referencing with less space. At in Oklahoma City at my parents' place, they've got probably a 2.5-car garage.
Okay.
I don't think it's definitely not a 3-car garage, but it's two with a little bit extra space. And that thing tucks away to, I mean, it takes no room when you're storing it.
Right. It's like,
but like
8 inches from the wall or whatever.
Right. And so I basically have a 4x8 assembly table and that whole saw set up, and they can park two cars in there whenever I'm not, you know, working in there and have things set up. So
it's a 2-car
for that location,
ACS garage.
I was about to say, for that location, I really do believe like the ACS is almost the perfect fit for it.
Quite literally.
Quite literally. Because yeah, it fits so perfectly.
Yeah.
But yeah. So what have you been working on though?
Oh man. So the workshop is okay. For the people who know me, you guys know I'm like pretty organized in the workshop. I like to keep it pretty clean, right? So the whole
for
time
sure
that I've been in this space since I moved in here like a little bit over a year ago, right, I've had it like pretty organized, but I've never felt like fully moved in. It's always been like I'm like 80% moved in, and there's like more stuff that I wanted to organize that I never got to because I'm just like, I'm not fully moved in yet, so what's the point or whatever, right? So now Sean is moving down, or started moving down this past weekend. Today's Monday that we're recording this. He'll be back here again today, and now we can really start organizing everything. But before he came, like I really like went through things and started organizing and like getting rid of a lot of this stuff that I know I don't need anymore, or like, you know, just like scraps of wood that you just like hold on to for too long that you're like, oh, I'm gonna do something with this eventually. No.
Yeah.
I'm being real. I'm not gonna. So I'm getting rid of stuff that I don't need. So I had it like as clean as it's ever been. Like it was like so organized. I was like, oh yes, this is great. We're ready for the move in. And then like he shows up with this gigantic truck with the lift gate. We just like take everything out and throw it all out here and like we'll organize it later. And now it's just like chaos in here. So I had it like super organized for 12 good hours that it looked.
And it felt amazing.
It felt amazing that night while I was sleeping in bed, just knowing how organized it was here. And now,
so is he bringing a whole workshop? As in like a whole double set of tools? Or how's that whole situation going to work?
Yeah, so he basically brought everything, I think, except for his CNC, which is, we both have X carves. And we already have two of them here because the other guy, Jason, that I moved into the shop of already had one as well. So it's like, all right, well, we don't need three of them here. Two will be plenty. So everything, he brought everything else. He even brought his dust collector, which I think I told him not to bring. Sean, if you're listening to this, damn it. So now we
way
have,
to go, Sean.
So now we have two dust collectors that are like the one that I already had that we really don't need because if you've watched my videos and noticed a crate that's like sitting up against the wall for the past 6 months, that's been a dust collector that I've been waiting, a bigger, better dust collector that I've been waiting to put together for the past 6 months until this move happened. So yeah, I don't know what they're going to be just collecting dust figuratively.
I was about to say, either way, it's not going to be dusty.
Yeah. It actually probably still will be somehow, but
yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like a crap show in here. Now I'm looking out the window at the shop and it's just stuff littered all over the place. But this afternoon we will start organizing, and my goal is going to be to like in the next, by tomorrow, to have like all the big stuff like put away where it needs to go. And then like we can start worrying about the smaller stuff after, but at least just get it to the point where we can like work if we need to. Right now you couldn't even work in here because there's just stuff everywhere. And then so this Saturday, the video is coming out for the side table nightstand. That's going to be the like workshop classroom build or whatever. So that's going to officially kick that off. So
awesome.
It's all done. It's all ready to go. Website is ready to go pretty much, just like waiting on a few things that we need to like make it live. And one of the things we're going to try to do is actually, since the one that we built in the video was kind of like a prototype and now the finished design changed a little bit. So I want to this week, not even film it, but just like quickly knock out the finished design of it, which the top's all the same. So all I have to do is basically build two legs and some stretchers to connect them. And then that'll be good, so that I can hopefully have time to interject that into the video that goes live. That way it's like, everything's in there. I don't need to worry about like,
yeah,
they go to the website and then it's different and whatever. I really don't want that. I want it to be like as seamless as possible. So that's my goal for this week, is to get organized and get all that stuff done. And then
I like it.
Like you said, Workbench Con, you know, it's going to be a real short week next week until we leave for that. But I guess the plan after that's going to be to figure out, like, we're going to have to build some stuff for the workshop. So the next couple weeks of my life will probably be pretty plywood heavy, building out stuff for the workshop. And then we're also like this office space that I'm in right now recording, we're going to take over half of it as well. And we're going to kind of turn it into like office / set, so that we'll be able to film stuff in here too. So I've already got some stuff designed for that. Like,
you're going to do some peel and stick wallpaper in there at all?
Oh, hell yeah.
Dude, I'm telling you, I'm not leaning you towards that, but whenever I was doing the wallpaper in the kitchen area, I was sitting there thinking, oh man, I'm going to have so many backdrops now, because that stuff goes up so easy and it's just like a real unique look.
Yeah. I've got it. So I drew out a couple desks where I think do they call it an executive desk, where like two people would work and like face each other? You guys know what I'm talking about? Partners desks or whatever.
Sounds and like it's one desk. It's not two desks pushed against each other.
It sounds like the Southwest Airlines desk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Friends work free. It looks like two desks pushed together, but it'd basically be like, you know, instead of being 30 inches deep, they'd be 60 inches deep. And then a person would sit at either side of them. I think it was more of a thing that was common in, you know, probably like the 50s or something like that. You'd have like, I don't know, two accountants facing each other or something. So at first I was like messing around with that idea. And then I was like, well, since we want to kind of use it as a set, what would be cooler is, instead of perfectly facing each other, having it where it's at like a 60 degree angle. So we're kind of facing like each other and the camera. So it's kind of like a triangular-ish shaped desk that I've got worked out as the prototype. So I think we'll do something like that. And then probably just like some kind of shelves or something to kind of wrap around the back wall, so that I can put like a bunch of my shoes up and my old video game systems and like all the stuff that I've had that like, if I lived by myself, I would decorate my house with, but I don't, out of respect for my family. So I can go nuts here in the office, but yeah, that's.
Yeah. I think it might be called a partner's desk.
Is it partner's desk? Yeah. That sounds about right. I mean, that explains it. So makes sense.
Awesome.
Well, yep. That's my life.
Yeah. And on the note of desks and things, I want to shout out Dave Picciuto from Make Something. He's doing like a really cool kind of office. It's in his workshop. He's got the weirdest workshop, since we're talking about workshops. He's got a real weird setup, but it works for him. So I embrace it wholeheartedly. Like, I'm all for it. And so he turned one corner into a kind of desk setup. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, it is exactly like, and I say this in a good way, like a tech YouTube backdrop office setup. Mm-hmm. He nailed it 100%. It's got like acoustic panels that are lit really well, and they've got a really unique, really textural kind of pattern to them. Really awesome desk with a really clean top. So, and that was sort of what he was saying in his videos. He's like, obviously, I want this setup. It's where his editor is going to work at, some stuff like that. But he's like, also, look at how good this is. Like, this looks really good on camera. And so if I'm talking to the camera, if I need to do that, now I have a space where I feel comfortable doing it, and it looks nice. It's not something where it's like half set up and it works, but there's some compromises. It's just really nice.
That's going to be the interesting thing to address here, is sound. So like, we definitely want to film some stuff in here. And, you know, if I could get the sound to be good enough here that I don't have to record my voiceover in my closet anymore, that'd be a little icing on the cake. I don't know if that'll happen or not, but like, at least doing something to kind of control the sound. Like, I don't know what I sound like right now on this podcast, but it's a little bit echoey in here, since, you know, it's basically just like a small office that's an offshoot of a giant warehouse. But we can, you know, it's kind of like empty. It's all hard surfaces in here right now. So I'm sure we can do something.
Yeah, I've been thinking about how to do acoustic paneling in a sort of a DIY friendly way that actually looks good.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like any soft absorbent material will do something.
Yeah.
So I was looking at like industrial felt, or I was actually thinking the look I want to, I'm talking to some potential clients about a custom project, about doing another podcast studio. And the one I'm thinking about for that one is almost getting like navy, like dark, really dark navy, almost black, like wool, like the kind they use for like wool coats.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty thick fabric. It's about an eighth of an inch to even a little bit more thick. And then making really nice hardwood frames. So it goes up as like these big panels where it's like a walnut with like a navy blue wool inside of it, you know, or maybe like a light gray or something like that. So it would look really good. And then if I framed it, I could put some sort of batting to make it even a little bit more absorbent.
Yeah.
But I think even with just, you know, a fabric that thick, that would do some. The other thing that I was reading, that when you're sort of acoustically isolating a room, there's a few different ways to do it. One is absorbing the sound within the room, but the other is treating the wall so less sound comes from outside the room into the room.
Mm.
And for that, they often like suggest putting like another layer of gypsum board or hummusote, which is kind of like it's like MDF, but made out of like recycled paper. And it's a little bit softer than MDF, so it absorbs differently and there's less bounce off of it. But they also suggest gluing it onto the existing surface, because that way it doesn't, the construction adhesive won't transfer vibration as much as like mechanical connections surface to surface.
Right.
Or even just if you do put screws, putting in like a few beads of silicone just to give it a little more, you know, vibration resistance and make it a little more rubbery in between those. So it seems like it feels like you could get. One, we did that acoustic project with Schultz's studio, and the professional acoustic panels are really expensive. So it's something, and you don't have a ton of aesthetic options unless you spend a ridiculous amount of money. Like, I think the package of panels that we used was like $20,000 to $30,000 worth.
Oh, wow.
So I think there's like coming up with like a really clever way to do something that looks really clean and, you know, makes it like 80 or 90% better would be really interesting.
Yeah, I know. I've seen, I remember actually for the 2x4 challenge, do you guys remember? Or it was either that one or maybe it was the plywood one. Somebody did like a drop, like wooden design thing in, I think it was in their kitchen, that was like a sound deadening thing. And it looked very artistic.
Yeah, yeah,
do you remember that?
Yeah, it was like a drop ceiling kind of sound dampener.
Yeah,
it'd
almost be like if it was like a chandelier that didn't emit light. But
yeah, I do remember that. I can't remember exactly what it looks like, but whenever you mentioned the fact that it was like a drop ceiling thing,
yeah,
I do.
Like something like that could be cool. I mean, I'm looking around the room right now. Like I'm thinking of different options. Like I wonder what it would do. Like if you did say, like, because my plan behind me, like I said, was to just do like some open shelving and then like display a bunch of stuff on there. But like kind of like what Ben was saying, like instead of it being wood backed, like just put some material up on it, even if it was kind of thin and like maybe doing the bottoms of shelves and stuff like all. I feel like all of that stuff would add up a lot more than you think it would.
Right. Because at the end of the day, you're trying to stop the hard reflections
right.
back and forth, because that's what's going to cause the ugliest reverb. If your room has like just a little bit of resonance to it, that's okay. Because like how we're talking now, we're close to the mic.
Right.
So it's not that big deal. But if you're getting a lot of slap back and forth off of the walls, that's the biggest thing you want to diffuse and kill as quick as you can. The rest of it's like small problems that you can deal with later. So if you can replace hard 90 degree surfaces with soft, not 90 degree surfaces, mm-hmm. then you're going to make the biggest impact with the least amount of effort.
Right. It's that 80-20 rule. You're going to get 80% of the return off that 20% of the effort. And, you know, we're not going to be recording Mariah Carey vocals in here or something like that. So as long as it's decent, it just needs to be serviceable.
Exactly.
It doesn't need to be perfect.
Yeah, I think the key, and especially considering if the idea that you're wanting to film in there, is just how do we do it where it looks cool, yeah. It looks natural, and it's not those dang egg crate looking things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The like 12x12 or the 24x24 egg crate,
yeah, just like little,
diffuser panels,
spikes.
The like Aralex.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now they're making some that have sort of like different designs, but you just don't want that standard, like, right, you know, mattress topper look.
Yeah. Hey, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, as we look behind Ben. Well, only the two of us get that joke, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So... I know, I don't know what day it was, midweek, we got some texts from Ben. I don't know, is this something to talk about on the podcast? You were hobnobbing with some stars?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so Schultz was in town, Andrew Schultz, the comedian, and he hit me up. He was in LA, and he was like, hey, we're here for a couple days, you know, come hang out. And so went to the Comedy Store and got to hang out in the back and got to meet Joe Rogan and like Joey Diaz, like Jeff Ross. It was interesting because it was basically like their version of like Workbench Con, like on a regular night, but with like a kind of a VIP room in the back where the comedians can kind of like, you know, actually get a conversation in. It was funny whenever Rogan's out in like a semi-public area, like a line of people just trying to get selfies starts to form and it gets really creepy really fast. It's not creepy, like everyone's really nice, but you could it looks really exhausting because it's like, right, you're having a conversation with him and there's just like all of a sudden you just at the periphery of your eye there's just always someone kind of hovering, kind of like holding their phone, like kind of like,
right,
trying to kind of like raise their hand and be like, can I get into the circle, get the photo really quick and then get out of your way. But that happens like every 15, 30 seconds. So what's interesting about the store is that like behind, so there's like the hallway where people kind of hang out so they can listen to the sets, which you see in like all the photos on Instagram from that. And so people are kind of hanging out there. And then there's through the kitchen, there's a little hidden bar. So it's like kind of a green room with a bar in it. And it's maybe like a 14 by 16 foot room. And so we all got to hang out back there and, you know, just, you know, drinking whiskey and chatting. And yeah, it was cool because I'd heard about that place and, you know, a lot of those people have podcasts that I listen to. And it was funny that it basically feels like a clubhouse for like adults. And yeah, so we did that like on a Tuesday night and the lineup was just insane. Like, yeah, you know, if you're in LA, like it almost always sells out, but like get a ticket to the Comedy Store, to Laugh Factory, because it's just ridiculous how good the lineup is.
I was about to say, I think I looked at the lineup that night that you were there. It was like
Theo Vaughn, Andrew,
it was like Jeselnik, yeah, followed by Chris D'Elia, followed
it's
by
like eight names,
yeah,
that
exactly
you recognize.
What you're saying. It's crazy.
Like,
yeah,
right in a row, yeah, all just doing 15 minute sets. And like you hear them talk on podcasts of like, oh yeah, it's important to like, you know, repetition, going, doing it, honing it, all that stuff. And like, yeah, obviously that's super important. And then I'm sure it's also like fun because it's a bunch of your contemporaries that you're hanging out with. And I wonder if tangential, like, but would something like that or does something like that kind of exist in our space where it's like,
that's what I want to get to.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll let you get to it and then I'll chime back.
So what was interesting, it was like when I first got there, D'Elia was up and then, you know, he's hilarious because he's so physically animated. Mm-hmm. And then Jeselnik goes up and he's like,
he looks like a robot.
Well, you know, he was like working on like new material. So he has like his paper notes and stuff. And it's like kind of like, he's literally talking to guys. All right, let's try out this one. Oh, okay. What do you think? No,
little sneak peek behind the curtain.
Frankly, you guys don't look that smart. And yeah, so then he goes up and then Theo Vaughn was excellent. Rogan goes up. Rogan was great. Like I had always thought of him more as a podcaster than a stand-up comedian, but in a small room like that, like he's so energetic and like performative that it definitely added like a different level to it.
Nice.
Joey Diaz, hilarious. Andrew Santino was really good. But yeah, it was fun hanging out in the back. Talked to Tony Hinchcliffe for a bit, and he's actually was really interested in the Container House project because he comes out to Joshua Tree all the time. So we're talking about just, you know, what goes into sort of building some sort of compound, which is something he's looking into. So yeah, that was really fun. And then the next night we went to the Laugh Factory because Schultz was doing a set. And oh, we were also sort of working through, I think I'm going to be designing a stool that he uses for his special. You know, comedians always have like a stool.
Yeah.
So
where they like sip their water and all. It'll be awesome.
Right. So he was like, you know, you always see these stools in this special and they think of every detail and the stool is just the most generic, stupid stool.
Got it off overstock.com.
Right. So he's like, can you make me like a really cool stool for the special? So I think I'll probably make a couple of them. One, because they record over four nights and I was just worried that like it could break. And then the extra one we'll probably auction off for some sort of charity or something like that. So we were sort of brainstorming what the design would look like, looking at the renderings for the set that they're going to be working with. And then we went to the Laugh Factory, and it was like him, D'Elia, Santino. It wasn't quite as – it was still like an all-star, but was more like four or five like huge names deep rather than like at the Comedy Store, which was like eight or nine.
Yeah.
But Stylebender, Israel Adesanya, like shows up.
I was a little jealous when I saw that, dude. That was tight.
Yeah, because he's really tight with Schultz, and he's been on like all their podcasts and stuff. So it's like, you know, I'm sitting there and I see, you know, this pretty tall dude like walk through, and I'm like, damn, that looks like Stylebender. And yep, so got to meet him briefly, and you know, he's also was in town to do a bunch of press because then. He went to the John Jones fight in, I think, Houston.
Yeah.
So he was all stateside to do a bunch of ESPN media and then go to the fights in Houston before going back to finish training for Yoel Romero. But yeah, it was interesting. But, you know, Chris, you know, alluding to what you sort of brought up, which was sort of the reason why I wanted to sort of discuss it is like, I mean, originally before I got hung up doing the Container House out in Joshua Tree, I was planning on creating sort of a big public maker space.
Yeah, there was like that, like those old buildings you were looking at. Yeah, the church.
Right. And, you know, seeing this sort of Comedy Store that where like having a physical place where your peers can sort of get together. And then there's also sort of a way to co-exhibit to the public.
Right.
But then like kind of like a, you know, enough private space where you can still get stuff done. Is a really interesting idea that I kind of want to explore in the next couple of years. So I also just think that when you get everyone together in one place, I mean, we see it with WorkbenchCon, we see it with Makesgiving, it's fantastic for digital media. Because if one, it creates sort of common ground and it just makes sure people are reconnecting and maintaining a real friendship, not just sort of a likes and shares sort of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was a really exciting idea to think about. And, you know, let's just sort of go off on a brainstorming tangent.
Well,
now, what do you think like a place like that would look like? And what should it have? And what should it definitely not have?
What's the drink that Mike likes? Old fashioned?
That's right.
Old.
Unless you say not having an old fashioned. I just get myself in trouble with that.
Let's just keep those offsite. But other than that, they can be here. Well, okay, so here, before we jump into that, so the thing that it made me think about, which you kind of touched on, Ben, would be if, even at, like, the small, so let's just say that, like, 3 months ago, they had said, like, hey, Mike, Ben, Chris, Johnny, Mike, Ben, Chris, all the people that have the same name that make videos, Brad, at WorkbenchCon, we want you to all, like, premiere a new video of yours that's going to be up on YouTube, and, like, everyone's going to watch it, and all of your peers at the same time, right? So like already you're making videos that are being seen by tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, you know, if it's a really good video, maybe even millions of people. But like just knowing that like those 12 people who are your contemporaries or whatever are going to see it, it's going to make you work a little bit harder. Like it's stupid and as little as that sounds, it makes you work harder and it makes you step up your game a little bit. And if you do that over and over, it's like you're forged in the fire, like you're going to become better. By having to do that.
That's a really interesting point that I didn't consider, but totally makes sense, right? Like, so what, I mean, yeah, there's sort of two ways that I could see it sort of going. One is a makerspace where everyone's actually building. That's a huge space that is difficult to integrate into the public. And that, so, I mean, I think that's the obvious one that I'd always sort of thought of is that it'd be an actual big space for making.
Mm-hmm.
What you sort of suggest and what I started thinking about when you bring into the public component is that it's more of a gallery for launching videos and doing Q&As and then a gallery and showroom where people can buy and see like the pieces in person, right?
Yeah.
Which doesn't require as much space, can create like a, you know, an actual gallery type environment where people can come in, see the things in person, do demos and stuff like that, which could be sort of sponsor tie-ins. But that's a much more space efficient way with it than maybe has like a little small shop for like, you know, assembling and stuff like that. That would also be a totally different model, but interesting and not be redundant with, you know, because everyone already has kind of a shop that's this far along anyways.
Right.
So I think it could be some combination of both of those things or just one or the other.
Here's a question. So like when you did Makesgiving, right? Everybody came out there, they built projects. I don't know if you can rattle off all the projects that people did off the top of your head, but from the ones that I remember and from the ones I saw people doing, most of them were like a little bit more elevated in terms of like outside of the box from your normal project that you see. Like no one's just like, I'm just building a normal coffee table. Like right. Everyone was just like, kind of like, I'm going to up it a little bit and try this like weirder thing that I've not done before.
More experimental.
Like, yeah, more experimental. And like part of that's probably because like, well, I know I'll have access to like these people that can help me out with it, with something weird.
Yeah.
And also I think a part of it's just like, oh, I want to like bring my A game because everybody else is going to be doing stuff.
For sure.
Yeah. I think that's, yeah, maybe that's like kind of the idea is, I mean, doing a shop where actually like 10 people could work full time is just such a massive right. building, right?
Yeah. You just need to be geographically set. It needs to just be like Detroit right. was for the auto industry.
So maybe it's something where it's not that big of a shop. It's like a pretty good size shop, like something about your size, you know, 2 to 3,000 square feet. And then you have like a couple guest rooms, you know, mm-hmm. where actual like apartments connected to it. So you could have like rotating or visiting makers in residence, right?
Yeah,
so people
like
can stay for a week, right? So you schedule people that kind of are traveling and come in, they stay there and work and exhibit for like a week or 2 weeks, or they stay for 2 months or whatever it is relative to their schedule. I think something like that could be fun. So it's like, you know, it would be like my sort of full-time shop and whatever sort of other people are in the area, their full-time shops, maybe like two or three makers. But then there's always a couple apartments for sort of makers and residents to kind of come through and build stuff. But I really like the idea of having some sort of gallery element, right? Where you have enough different people with different making perspectives that you could have a showroom constantly filled with stuff. It would also create a retail market for things that could be way higher end than trying to sell things quickly and on the internet. You know, when you look at sort of custom woodworking furniture galleries, what they, you know, what pieces sell for, it's in the, you know, $4,000 to $20,000 range for a piece. And there is a market for that, particularly in, you know, the sort of more expensive cities.
Right.
So yeah, I think something like that would be really interesting. And then the, you know, if I did something like what I just described, I would think more like LA or an area like that. If I was doing something where it's just like the mega workshop, I would probably do it in a cheaper place like Joshua Tree, where it's just about doing that. And then maybe just like host events there
right.
for the public to come out, like, you know, once every couple months or like once a quarter, 4 shows a year. And the sort of precedent I was thinking about in that case would be there's like big antique fairs. Right. That are never, they're often not in major cities. They're like 2 hours outside of it, but they do them for right. a whole weekend and everyone comes out and it's like there's a lot to see.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea for sure. I mean, I think there's a lot of different benefits and potential with it. It's just kind of what you've been saying, like zeroing in on what's the way to do and present it that's actually achievable and appealing. In terms of like wanting to do it, you know, for the long term moving forward, because obviously you're going to be putting like a lot of resources and assets into doing something.
Yeah, I think like having like demos, like a demo space where it's like you come by like every night after work, you could stop by this place and there's like someone doing a different maker demo, whether it's like, oh, we're experimenting with epoxy or power carving or wood turning.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Or like making pottery, you know.
Sandblasting.
Or old-fashioned fountain, getting blasted in a different way.
Right, because well, that wasn't what I was saying,
Mike
right,
blasted.
Too. But yeah, I was about to say. Yeah, because it's like, how does having a bigger workshop create unique content? Like, you know what I'm trying to say is like, how can you leverage having more people in one space to create content you couldn't have made otherwise? And I think it's the combination of having a quote-unquote team that you can rely on as people that can film, as people that can make sure that the production of content it's just smooth, And then when you do have people in town, let's say you're going on that model where you've got someone in the shop for 2 weeks, you guys can do maybe some version of like a one day build where you guys both have different skills. You can combine them together to create a unique project, or you do it over the span of a couple of days. But what is really getting captured along with the actual build is all the in-between stuff, all the brainstorming whenever you hit a problem, or brainstorming to come up with what we're going to build in the first place, or those moments where he knows something that this other person doesn't, or she. And I think having just whatever kind of production team at hand that like they're just there, they're focused, making sure to capture all of the moments. Because I feel like what you guys are describing is leaning less towards tutorials and more towards casual entertainment. And so I think the hurdle has got to find is finding the middle ground of how do I make educational PBS content, but also how do I make edgy internet content that people still want to watch too.
You got to find that middle ground. I know this is out of left field, but just something that I was thinking about. Are Fry's Electronics all over the country?
For now.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay. So, and I'm sure that they're the same all over the place, but you know, they're all like themed. Like every store has like a theme to it, or it's like, this one's like aliens. This one's medieval times.
I've never been to one.
Well, that's how they are. They'll have like weird, like aesthetic themes to them, which sounds weird for an electronics store, but for whatever reason, that's the way they are. So I was thinking like, what if you like set up some kind of model where it's like, oh, it'd be cool if like every major city had one of these spaces, and you'd almost like start with one as like the case study. And then if it worked, then you would like complete that one and it would be an existing asset for that location, that geographical location. And then you'd move on and there was another one. And so like all the people that were coming through to build it out, like there'd be a sense of purpose of like, okay, here's what we're doing for the Atlanta one. Now we're doing a Chicago one or whatever. And like, so you'd like naturally think outside the box, because there'd be like this utility side of it, but there'd also be like, well, there's this aesthetic theme that we're going for this one. So everyone's like doing stuff and there's like a purpose. You're not just like, well, let me just think of something to do with no particular reason that I'm doing it. Just going around the city, building up
different themes.
Yeah. Weird.
It's like, what's up? This one, we're theming Roller Coaster Tycoon. Ooh, and then the next one is NBA League Pass.
I like both of these so far.
I
can't choose which
those
one
were
to go
actually
to.
Pretty decent ideas.
They're pretty decent.
No, I think it could be cool. I think, yeah, the key is, I think, figuring out like what's the outcome? What do we want more of? Do we want more podcast type content? Because if that's the case, then we need studios with rooms like what you were talking about earlier in the episode, Chris, where you can get people sat down. They can just kind of riff. They can do, let's talk about design. They can do whatever, you know, it can be a space. Do we want more legitimate, just DIY build projects out of it? And if that's the case, then we want, you know, maybe a giant workshop, but in that giant workshop, there's 12 small workshops.
Yeah.
You know, you've got some shared tools, but you've got bays, you've got filming bays. Or are you wanting more? Are you wanting to create like what Ask This Old House does when they go to Jimmy's shop and they do a collab? Or whenever, you know, or what they do on Adam Savage's sort of tested channel, where it's more like, come hang on the shop and just like watch people come up with ideas on the fly. And then I think once you've got the like, what's the desired outcome, then you can like really fit the space to suit that.
Indeed.
But you all tell us, what do you want to see more of? The listeners, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I right now I'm leaning, for some reason, and it might be I'm thinking about it wrong, but tell me what you think. The idea of having 10 people working full time in one workshop sounds really complicated and full of problems, right?
Yes.
But
unless they're all like very similar minded people.
But 10 people sharing like an exhibition and sort of demo space, you know, with a light workshop for setup and for, you know, visiting sort of people that are out that don't live in that area that are going to stay for a week and build a project there sounds a little bit more doable in some ways. Because one, it's the assumption that I'm sort of working off is that everyone already has a workshop to some degree. You know, we all want different workshops or to change ours or expand them or to add things. But everyone right now in our sort of space is building stuff someplace.
Right.
But the idea of like physically housing finished projects and having sort of a classroom and exhibition and group production studio, you know, right now, I mean, our podcast doesn't exist on YouTube because we're not in the same space. We're not filming it and making a quality enough video product. I mean, we could do a screen capture onto Google Hangout, but it's just a little bit janky. It's not, not, I think, worth the squeeze. But
people freeze and drop out.
Right. The ability to create that kind of video content, I think, that sort of is, you know, in between sort of podcast and YouTube, I think would be a big value add, like having a studio all set up for that. And, you know, and having that set up in like a shop demo environment, I think would be really interesting. Because like, if we're doing a video podcast where the three of us are in the same place, doing it in a shop where we're all mic'd up and could be actually like going over, like, here's how I do this, would be really interesting. So it might be shorter. It might be like 15 minutes where we take like the thing of like the, like what Mike described on the ACS. You know, that's fine as audio content, but how much better would that be if we're actually like doing that as a 15-minute video, just sort of going over the capabilities and doing that kind of stuff. So I think like that kind of facility, even if it's not everyone's sort of day-to-day build shop, but just has that potential, would be like, for the amount of square footage needed, could add a lot of different content options and also create a fun sort of hangout place for the public.
For sure. I dig it.
All right. What are you guys obsessed with?
Ooh.
Well, two things. Going to give a shout out to the guy that won the Academy Award for Best Picture and Best Director. His name's Bong. Pretty cool. But he did that movie Parasite, which I still haven't seen yet.
Have you seen it, Mike?
No, this is my first time hearing
about
it.
But I've seen a couple of his other movies. And so I was actually going to recommend one of his other movies, which I may have recommended before, but it's called Okja. Fantastic movie.
Oh, wait. Parasite. He's an Asian dude.
Yes.
Yeah, Korean.
And the Korean movie's all in Korean.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen it. It was a good movie. It had really good music, had fun sound design. There was a little bit of, and it could just be a cultural thing, but there was a little bit of what I viewed as like corniness to it, where like people were like acting a little physically, like the acting was very physical acting.
Like overacting?
Maybe if that's the word, but I thought the movie was pretty good. The like zombie things that they turned into were pretty savage.
Spoiler alerts. I haven't seen it, I don't even know.
If watch a trailer, I didn't give you anything.
I guess Parasite.
No, but it was a good movie. It was fun. And I think that might be like the fifth movie I've ever watched that's subtitles all the way through. Mm-hmm. And I watched it all the way through and, you know, I liked it. But I watched it like a year ago.
Yeah, I feel it's been out for a minute.
Oh, okay, cool. Because whenever you said best new movie or something like that, it didn't even register.
Yeah.
I'm just so far, I'm just so far above the wave. I was like, I saw this last year.
I'm already watching stuff that's coming out in 2025.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that 2025 Best Picture nomination.
I just saw Fast and Furious 15.
So that would be my film recommendation. And for television, I started watching that show Briar Patch on USA.
I've pretty heard good. Of that.
Very, very good. It's funny too, because it's actually written by a former TV critic, Andy Greenwald. And so I'd always listen to his podcast on The Ringer.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to see someone go from a critique of or critic of that medium to actually producing in that. So it's like, oh, Mr. has all the answers. Let's see how you do when you start making your show, running your own show.
They should make UFC analysts do the same thing. Yeah. All right, you get in there and fight.
Yeah, come on, Stephen A.
Bro, can we just get him away from MMA? He's talk about basketball, quit talking about fighting.
Look, sure ESPN makes them.
Anytime you do something that reaches that many people, it gets to fast food quality. Stephen A's fine. He's very popular, but he's a fast food quality commentator.
Yes.
He's as good at talking about sports as McDonald is at making hamburgers.
So really
serve
good.
A lot of people, but
he's going to give you a mild take.
Yeah.
Constantly.
But yeah, no, Briar Patch, first two episodes, I watched those and excellent. Love the way it's shot. Love the whole look and feel. It kind of feels a little bit like a Coen Brothers kind of production, but a little bit more edgy and a little more visual. Yeah, check it out.
All right. Hey, while we're just barely off the topic of MMA, did you guys watch the Jones fight this weekend? I did.
Oh, yeah. Against Dominic Reyes.
What did you guys think?
I thought Jones eked it out.
I really believe every round was a 10-9 round, and Reyes won 1-3, clearly. I think round two could have gone 50-50, and considering that John Jones had the belt,
okay, so
I would say unless you clearly win the round, it kind of goes to whoever's got the strap.
Okay.
And so
nobody's considering upset John Jones with the decision.
I think John Jones won 4 and 5 pretty clearly. And I think Dominic Reyes won 1 and 3 pretty clearly.
Yeah.
I think round 2 was the one where it could have gone either way. And I would have given it to John Jones if I was judging.
I watched it and like I heard afterwards that like a lot of people were upset by the decision. And I was like, really? Like I felt like it was, I would have given it 3-2 for Jones. And I felt like, I know other people have said this before, but like go back and watch the fight without sound on. Cause I feel like a lot of that was like the commentary. You know, they were acting like, oh man, Jones is getting beat up here. He's running away or whatever. And like, yeah, in the beginning, Reyes was like walking him down more. But then like from, I don't know, the third round on, Jones was pretty much walking him down. The third round, I actually could see going either way. I was kind of split on that one. But I felt like that's the one where Reyes actually had like the best shots that he got on him. Like he got that uppercut on him. That was probably the best shot. Yeah. You know, nobody was ever like really rocked in the fight. It was just like a lot of like beating each other up, like. Obviously, they were taking damage, and it was a good fight. Yeah, I would say that, that Jones ended up...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Jones ended up being the aggressor more of the time, so like it was pretty even. Yeah. I would give it to Jones if, like I said, 3-2.
Yeah, and I don't give it to Jones for the takedowns either. No, too many people, I think, are saying... First off, I agree with everybody that says takedowns shouldn't count... You shouldn't get any points for takedowns, in my book.
Yeah, it's what you do.
You don't get takedowns for initiating a clinch, and... That's securing a position so that you can hopefully do damage. Get points when you do damage or maybe get points off of like a deep submission attempt. I'll give you that. But I think a takedown is like, it's the same thing as like octagon control. Like if you take someone down, you hold them down the entire round. Great. You secured octagon control. But if you just get a takedown for him to stand back up, you didn't do anything.
Yeah, it should be a tiebreaker, not like a major scoring feature.
Right. And so I agree with you and everyone that's, I think what you were saying about watching it without the sound on, Chris, I think you're so right. Cause yeah, I think, you know, like Dominic Cruz was like very impressed at rounds 1 and 2 from Reyes. And like, if you're listening to that, you're absorbing all of that. And that's really factoring into your decision. But John Jones, a guy who's had, he's had more title defenses than anyone else. So he knows, he's like, I'm going to let him go hard in round 1. Right. I'm going to not take damage. Round 2 was sort of like a 50-50 split. And then from round 3 on, John Jones controlled the ring the whole time.
Yep.
So he's like, yeah, I've been here. I'm going to let him gas himself out a little bit. I'm going to not take damage. And then I'm going to win rounds 3, 4, and 5, maybe.
Yeah.
Or 2, 4, and 5 in my book. But yeah, I agree with you. But it was a good fight. It was really impressive on Reyes's side, though. I was genuinely impressed. He's got crazy cardio. He never quit moving.
Oh, he's good.
He didn't really take bad damage. And I think he sort of unlocked the key to beating John Jones. Don't gas out. Don't stop moving your feet and constantly attack John Jones's legs before he attacks yours.
Yeah. Yeah. And also be just as big and athletic as him. That helps.
And also be the strongest. Like he's so strong.
Yeah,
I would have really loved to seen him. And I want to hear your take on it too, Ben. My bad. I would have been really curious to see what would have happened in round 4 or 5 if Reyes tried to secure a takedown. Mm. Seeing how strong he was and how decent his wrestling base is, I'm not trying to say he would have gone crazy, but to everybody that says John Jones won off takedowns,
nah.
I'm curious what would have happened if it flipped the other way.
Look, I thought no one got robbed. It could have gone either way, but you leave it to the judges. That's what you get. And yeah, Reyes is really good. And Jones struggles a little bit more when guys are just as tall and athletic as him. I mean, so I think what we saw with Jones early in his career, he was fighting against a previous generation of guys that just didn't have the same athleticism and skill set. And now it's becoming every fight's more of a struggle. And the same thing happened with like George St. Pierre. Like early in his career, he was just blowing people out. And then near the end, every fight
was a decision.
Was a 5-round decision, but he just won with by being a little bit better.
So this was his Johnny Hendricks.
Exactly.
Fight.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fight I'm excited next for is the Khabib Tony fight. That's gonna be sick.
Yeah, and your boy Stylebender, man.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome, too.
Yeah, that's, dude, to have to fight Yoel Romero is so scary. Like, regardless of, like, how long and how fast Adesanya is, because I really think he's got the fight unless something happens. But, man, that's just one. You're just one shot away with Romero. He's a tank.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Back to obsessions. Are we done?
That's right. I think we're done.
Okay.
All right, everybody. Well, thanks a ton for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. It was all over the place, but hey, it was longer than normal. So hopefully for anybody that was here looking for some time to pass, I don't know. Maybe we got there, but we do appreciate y'all listening every week. Give us some feedback. If you got any topics you want us to talk about or any questions you think we should answer, hit us up on Instagram. I am at Modern Builds. Ben is at Benjamin Ueda, and Chris is at Four Eyes Furniture. Thanks again for watching, and we'll see you next time on the Modern Maker Podcast. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.